Hello there. I'm Tammy Zadunik, founder of The Well Collaborative, and this is our podcast. Here we deliver education on feminine business principles to our amazing Well women. Every month on The Well Collab podcast, you will hear from women in our community, sharing their truth, wisdom, knowledge, and lived experiences as they grow their businesses based on values and authenticity. We can't wait to engage with you further on these topics as we connect with you within the Well community. May your voice be amplified so you can be seen, heard, and celebrated. Enjoy the podcast.
I think I want to start with you just introducing yourself.
I'm Linda, and I am an entrepreneur and have been for some years now. You know, I have two consultancies that I've developed based out of ideas that were just rolling around in my brain. Both of them inform today's talk because I very much swing back and forth between them, bringing the lessons of one to inform the other, the mistakes of one to reflect on the other, the admin gap, which is about business process and organizing, and my dream job, which became my dream job as a working genealogist.
I think people want to know after your talk, they'll be like, is she taking clients? So how many clients do you take on a monthly or yearly basis with the admin gap?
The admin gap, I've pivoted the last 2 years. I was riding two horses with the admin gap and with past presence. And what I always felt was I would keep riding the horse that pulled ahead. And 2 years ago, genealogy just really pulled ahead. The opportunity, also my dream job, and you should always follow your passion because it doesn't feel like work when you spend all of your time on it.
Yeah.
Therefore, with the admin gap, I still work on it, but really in more of a teaching phase. I give speaking engagements. I teach the lessons, and I love that. I love the speaking part of that. As for consultancies, I've moved away from working with companies with their administration because a part of what I did was to really dig into the nuts and bolts of how one application works or doesn't work with another application, which is a lot about security, protocols, passwords. And I did notice even 2 years ago that it was getting increasingly more difficult to remotely work on someone else's application.
Right.
Oh, so privacy, increase care about hackers. And so that's one of the reasons why, two or three of the reasons why I've shifted with the admin gap and am now really focusing on work as a professional genealogist.
Yeah. And I think there's something to be said about allowing for the, I like how you refer to it as the horse, like allowing for this saying that makes sense. It reveals itself rather than being forced. It was the stronger contendant at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what you needed to pay more attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And things are always shifting in our businesses and in our lives. And I think you're speaking to a group of women who are multi-passionate.
Definitely.
I feel that we, like, women tend to be able to do so many things in the course of a day. And a lot of women, it's because they have to. They've chosen to have children. They've chosen to have a partner, to have a pet, to have hobbies, and to pursue those things. And there is just this natural tendency where things start to pull you more and they start to lead. And it's okay to follow that.
It's not only okay to follow that, but we have to be mindful when we are choosing our horse. I think as women, because we are so multi-talented, multi-passionate, that we get too diffuse. And it is not that you can't do a dozen things.
Mm-hmm.
It's that it's going to take you a dozen years to get any one of those things to fruition. And as women in business, we need to watch the bottom line, and like breaking even is, it has to be one of our very early goals.
Yeah.
So you're not going to be able to break even, partly because it's just impossible to focus on 10 things at once, and partly because your customers don't know what you stand for or what you do.
Yeah.
Or what you can sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to make that crystal clear to the people who are going to buy services and want to buy things from you.
Okay, so we're talking about mistakes today. Things that we've done or choices that we've made that haven't been the best choice because we didn't know. But when I think about you saying that, when you're speaking that to me about this confusing messaging,
mm-hmm.
confusing your clients,
mm-hmm.
that's a mistake that I think most of us make.
100%.
Especially early on.
Absolutely. Because we don't know what it is we want to focus on or do. And, you know, when I was thinking about what we would be talking about today and all the mistakes, and so by no means do I mean to say that I've only made this one mistake that we're going to discuss. No, no, no. I have made every mistake. But for myself, I'm a person who loves analyzing and thinking about things. If anything, actually, that is also my greatest weakness. And so when I was first starting out in business, I was too careful. I was too nervous. I overanalyzed. I wrote business plans. I now realize in retrospect that what I was doing is I was masking and camouflaging my fear of being seen and of selling products and services
mm-hmm.
by standing back and analyzing everything and wasting that capacity and time and resource that I could have been using to build my business by hanging around and being afraid to jump in.
Huh, that's interesting. So I'm the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So I jump into everything before I'm ready and before I've really thought it through or planned at all. And I'm not saying to do that. I'm not saying either way is right. It's just we operate, women all operate differently. And it's really great to hear that maybe the listeners are even operating differently than
mm-hmm.
or they're somewhere in the middle. And I think we all naturally operate in different ways. And that's how we learn our lessons.
Like, yes.
And that's how we learn and how we can teach and how we can lead is through knowing ourselves. So essentially, you know yourself and you know that you don't jump in, but how's that changed?
Well, it's funny because, you know, if we could just have the two of us melded together, I feel like we together would be just this one single powerhouse person because I need to move and I have moved closer to how you do business. I execute faster. I fire faster. I abandon ideas that aren't working faster.
Yes.
And I sometimes feel like this isn't me because inside me wants to sit on the thing, wants to stay with the relationship. And here I do want to expand a bit on that because I think I am loyal like a dog to all of my relationships.
Right.
And that doesn't play really well with business.
It doesn't.
Is so your relationship with your say less than perfect bookkeeper or your first less than perfect admin assistant, or you name the first time you expend those valuable resources to help you in your business and it's not working for you. And yet you still,
because we feel bad,
you keep on with it. You keep building that relationship and you make excuses for the relationship that's not working. And now I give it a much shorter time frame. I'm more judgmental because that's actually a useful skill.
Yeah.
And if it's not working, bad clients. You don't say no to your worst clients soon enough. You don't shed them soon enough. And the thing is, if you are spending too much of your resources serving the not ideal client, then you are closing the door to your ideal client.
Mm-hmm. Because time is our greatest resource and we're getting the
right
time and capacity, which
mm-hmm.
is essentially the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I find that interesting. I want to dig a little more into that because I think we need to talk about this relationship piece. I think that as we feel bad, there's like a guilt component there and maybe there's a distrust of ourselves
mm-hmm.
and of what we know to be true. Like
mm-hmm.
we know the right thing to do. I know for myself personally, I've been labeled things that I've held on to or people I have let go of business relationships with, wanting still to carry on the other relationships. But when you say judgmental, it's interesting because you're actually judging a skill set or a match or an alignment. You're not judging a human. You're not judging their human qualities. We're saying, this isn't a fit. And I have even advised some of my clients that I coach before saying, you're not doing them any favors by keeping them on.
Mm-hmm.
This is not something that's even in alignment with them. They don't want to be here. You can tell by the way they're behaving in your business. They're not happy.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping them on in that capacity, keeping them miserable is not helping them. You have to let them go, both
that's
for you and for them. It's not working. What is that? Why do we feel bad?
I think in line with the feminine economy is a is an understanding that inside each of us, we are our own wise women. Mm-hmm. We already know internally what the right thing is to do.
We do.
But generally speaking, in society, we are told that we don't know what we're doing. And so we fight our intuition, who knows all, who sees everything. And instead, we apply those learned behaviors. And in some ways, we gaslight ourselves. We distrust our internal wise woman. And so one of the lessons that I've taken from that is, especially when you're doing something that is entirely creative, that isn't in the world or not in the world the way that you envision it, which are certainly both the admin gap and past presence, those things didn't exist before I created them. And my fear at creating them, because how good could they be? Because I created them. And now with the perspective of what's happened with both of them is your internal wise woman really does know everything. You need to listen to her more often, and especially when you are questioning the decisions. If it's not a right fit, it doesn't matter if it's a client, a community, persons in your family, because that's a huge part of your business life, or professionals that you hire, recognize that soon. And let that go before you develop even more of a long-ranging, non-working relationship than you've already got.
Yeah, I think it's about believing yourself.
Yes.
Believing that wise woman. I love that analogy. I love thinking about her and letting her speak. And moving through some of that discomfort, those physical, those body sensations that come up when we're uncomfortable because of other things that are going on in our mind and often stories that aren't our own.
That's right.
When you're talking, I'm thinking about the feminine economy. The principle one is you have a body. What is your body saying to you? Listen to her. She's good. She wants to guide you and lead you. And it all comes down to that. And I love when you're speaking about business, things that make you money and make you profit and give you a great life. But you are coming right back to your intuition.
Yes.
Right away.
Because when you speak your truth and, you know, and here I do need to share. So I had to count for this podcast up until today. So 2023 and into 2024, I had 39 public engagements. So 6 radio, television, documentaries, 6 live performances, 21 webinars. It was monumental. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was also right place, right time, but it was also the ability to execute on the timing. Like I was ready when the world shifted to meet me. Now, speaking and standing on a stage is not for everyone. I know a lot of people quail at even expressing their opinion in a group. But here's the thing. If you speak your truth, if it's the very first time, there's that inner quail of, oh, what am I doing? My physical self is saying, I've never done this before. My voice is rusty. I don't know the right words. And so I should stop talking. And that's what happens to too many of us. We stop our own voice. I encourage every woman to get over that hurdle, join a circle, speak their truth. Because the truth is, the more you speak your own truth, the more confident you are. Because, of course, you know your truth.
You're the only one who knows it.
Yeah.
You cannot be wrong when you're speaking your truth from your lived experience. That is what the well is based on. You can't be wrong because it's yours.
Yeah.
It's your story. And okay. It's your perspective.
And so the well. So let's talk about that, because another mistake that I made early was isolating myself, hyper-analyzing, and not reaching out, not finding my community. And now with the well, you have this amazing opportunity to connect with people, to learn to speak truth, to speak in public, to practice that. And the most important thing, which we spoke about earlier, is to clearly state what it is that you do so that other people can buy it from you.
I just want to say, we at The Well, we say, this is your room, this is your practice space.
Yeah.
We're not going to be mad at you if you get your pitch wrong. We really want you to use this to practice and to grow. Pull your voice. And if you're an expert, like if you're like Linda, who knows how to share what you do, that gives us an example. And that's why we need the intergenerational and the and not even generational, but we need the different years in business.
Absolutely.
As a leader.
Yeah.
We need women who are different and diverse in that way so that we can see what it can feel like and look like and learn from you how to do that. It's so important to me. I mean, I get shivers. It's so important to me to have diversity in the sense, in every way, but in the sense of years in business, age, season of life.
And to add to that, I will say that I'm kind of a strange case because I definitely grew up in a traditional Chinese household. And in our household, children were seen and not heard. But in addition, women take a back seat to men in the communication department. Men speak 98% of the time, women speak 2% of the time. And if you have an opinion, you're more likely to be judged or shut down by, unfortunately, the people who love and support you, supposedly. And so speaking up as a Chinese Canadian woman has also been the extra hurdle of being so uncomfortable being seen. That's why I have had a fear of being seen. As women, one of the great strengths that we have is that we can recognize the lessons that we have learned, and we can share those lessons as stories.
Yeah,
that has stories with our community.
Mm-hmm.
And when we bring that back and we say, this is my story, this is how it happened to me, other people listening can perhaps relate and say, oh, but that's me. You could be talking about me. I had that, which again builds confidence when you're speaking until eventually you'll be able to perhaps be on a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like podcast is such a great next step because you're not on camera.
Mm-hmm.
Some you are, but we're not. You're not being seen. So there's a bit of a safety. There's still an editing. It still gets edited.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's a great next
step.
It's
not live.
It's not live, right? There's this great next
right.
step that happens. Yeah, so you come into the circle and you're able to share and you're able to write your profile, write your directory. That stuff is all really hard. And when you're speaking about growing up in a Chinese home where you're being quiet, you know you're supposed to be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up not in a fundamentalist Christian home, but I came from that environment, that larger family network, and also have been involved in churches where that has women's voices have not been heard. So it's a different way, but I definitely know that subconscious be
mm-hmm.
quiet. And I am not quiet. I'm not a quiet person. And I have a fierceness in me. I don't want women to feel that they have to be quiet unless they are choosing that. But I need to come to your shirt because you have a shirt on it today that says be heard.
I do.
We're talking about this and I keep looking at your shirt that says be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, tell me about the shirt.
So the shirt, the black shirt with large block letters that say be heard, that you can read across the room. And honestly, I feel so confident wearing this t-shirt every time, and it's falling apart. I've had it for, I don't know, 6 years easy. But I feel like my public speaking platform happened because of this shirt. It was almost like the shirt found me. And so the very first time I stood up in front of a live audience to share things that I'd learned in genealogy, there were a number of things, but there was my genealogy society. I remember that was terrifying, and yet they were such a wonderful audience. I don't know what I was so afraid of, and then. Early on, I was televising across to a university in the States, and I was almost poleaxed with fear because I couldn't see them. I worried so much about how I would sound. I overfocused on the details. And the thing about preparation is that you can overprepare on all the wrong things. Like, we can be preparing, but if we're not actually worrying about the sound bites and what is the goal, what is the message? Because early on, when we are speaking our truth, there's a point that you, or two or three points, like your call to action at the end will wrap up, you know, what it is that you're trying to say. But when you're unpracticed, you get lost in the story. Your message, again, is very diffuse. And so practice brings that to, what am I going to say? This is what I'm going to say. Here are the three things that I need you to hear from me. And here's what we just talked about, which are the three things I've just said.
Yeah.
Which is communications 101, but you'd be surprised how many times people, what was I saying? What was that story going? I can't remember.
That happens to me every Monday morning when I do a live on Mighty Networks for the Well Woman. I write down my notes, but then I go, what was I saying? Or I'm recording a video. And I think practice, practice, practice.
Yes.
Exposure, exposure, exposure.
100%.
Expose yourself. Yes. That is something that I want to go back to, that speaking. I'm so glad we're talking. I know this wasn't, I always let the podcast take it one day. I was doing some photos for a gentleman named Amin yesterday. He's an amazing movement. He does this animal movement, and he's just this fantastic human being in Saskatoon. And he was talking about how when you get a sore hip, the very thing you need to do is move your hip. Mm-hmm. You get, your leg is sore, you need to walk.
Yes.
And I thought of that when you said that women start to speak. And then they go, oh, I don't know what I'm saying. Who am I to speak? I shouldn't be speaking. What do I know? No one wants to listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
The very thing you need to do is speak more. Speak more. Move your body more. Speak more.
That's right.
Speak into the pain. Speak through the discomfort.
Yes.
You know what I do? I always do is I say I'm uncomfortable. I just say, oh, I'm so nervous. I don't know why I'm so nervous. Okay, I get it out there. You all know now. We all know.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm to the point where I don't need to do that anymore.
Right.
I'm getting more comfortable the more I do it. I prepare the way I need to prepare writing notes.
Mm-hmm. I have to tell you that when you level up,
yeah,
you're never going to lose the I'm uncomfortable.
Shoot.
I shouldn't be here. Who am I?
Okay.
Because in communications, like, so let's talk about mistakes. I would definitely say my first radio interview, which I did here at CBC Saskatoon, I didn't prepare enough on the messaging, and I completely dropped the call to action. And when I was driving home after the interview, I was castigating myself for having done a terrible job because I didn't say the one thing, you know, the one goal. Like, and it took me some time to get over that. Now I look back on that and I realize that was a big thing to jump into without much preparation. Like, I hadn't done podcasts before that. And being in a radio studio is intimidating. It's, you know, it's dark, there's baffling. You've got your interviewer like right nose to nose with you. It's intimate in a way that I hadn't prepared for. So later on, when you do the big media, like radio, television, documentaries, filming, and there are other factors that you do to get prepared. And what I learned is, first of all, if you look amazing, you can relax into your persona. So I had to learn things like makeup and costuming and what is the right suit jacket to wear for the microphone, and so that if you cross your legs, you won't show too much skin and instantly get nervous, which distracts you from your television interview, right? So there's that.
I was going to say you're limiting distractions.
Yes.
You're limiting distractions. Preparation limits some of the distractions.
Yes.
And I love that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so my one call to action for this would be, if there is a public event that any of our listeners are mulling over, whether it's speaking to their professional association or taking that radio interview, because radio is live, you don't get a chance to practice, or whatever leveling up it is, take it, do it. And then Don't be shy. Feel free to ask other people and say, I'm doing my very first fill in the blank thing here. Does anyone have any advice for me to speak to Global, CTV, CBC? Because there are people in our community who have experience with most likely most of the platforms that you're going to do.
Yes. So you can reach out to Linda, but don't only reach out to her on this limited time.
Right. Can I share this one story?
Oh, please.
The most terrifying interview that I did last year.
Love it.
It was last minute, and it was on behalf of my corporate sponsor. And you're working with a corporate sponsor, there are speaking points that you need to be able to hammer home. And this is when practice becomes, it just has to be a part of your toolkit. But I'm a person who really likes to overprepare. And so when they said, so it's 7 p.m. on a Monday night, can you speak with the Washington Post tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.? I was like, no, I'm not sure. I'm never going to be able to speak to the Washington Post, actually. So we managed to push it off for 6 hours, which gave me a tiny bit more time to prepare. But her interview style was perfection in that she felt like a lawyer. I felt like I was being grilled. Within 10 minutes, I felt like I didn't know what I was saying. And by 50 minutes, I was certain that I was coming across like a know-nothing idiot. Like it just, because her facial expressions were nil. She gave me nothing. She asked me questions. She didn't respond. She didn't smile. And so the very best journalists might do this with you because they want you to say something that you're not quite prepared to say.
Yeah, I can see that.
Right.
I think of Barbara Walters.
Yes. And so prepare yourself for the uncomfortable interview just by knowing you know you. You got this. There were times when I actually had to employ tools such as, that's a great question. Let me just think about that for a moment and then take a breath.
Right. Okay. Permission to pause.
Yes.
Permission to take a beat.
Permission to think.
Permission to think. You get to take that time.
And you can also take a question that you're not quite prepared to answer, and you can instead divert it. You can instead ask a different question, which is more sophisticated in terms of interviewing, but that was by far the most difficult interview that I did last year.
How did it go? How did it turn out?
Well, my corporate client took over a day to respond, which gave me a whole day to castigate myself and tell myself that I was terrible. And then when I came back and they said it was wonderful, I wasn't even sure who they were talking to. And so, see, you are your worst critic.
People are busy. I was thinking you
just
apply for an interview or you do a podcast or you do something live and people don't respond. They're busy. They're not doing it. It doesn't mean it was bad.
Yes.
But we do write a lot of stories and narratives in our head.
But that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a very recent one. And all I'm saying is you're going to level up. Each level is going to be uncomfortable. It'll be okay. You got this. You really do know your stuff.
Yeah. And I think a lot of, especially with radio or TV or something like that, even if it's live, it also is the way you make people feel when you're speaking. It's not always having all those things perfectly figured out of what to say.
Actually, it's better if you're not perfect and because you come across
as human. Yeah. It's attractive. People are attracted when they're honest. And even if that means there's a little bit of, there's that human quality comes across, I think people appreciate that. Oh, this is a real person. It's not too polished. You know, they're professional. I trust them, but they're human. I feel like I can talk to them.
Well, let's talk about that in terms of the feminine economy, because I feel like as women in a mainly parochial space, and I think we've all had jobs where if we're not working in that now, we've worked in that in the past where we feel like we've had to give up our feminine side. We've had to ape knowing everything, being more confident than we are. not being able to say, well, let me get back to you, let me think about that, let me take a breath or a beat, it doesn't come naturally to us. It doesn't come naturally in business either.
Business has been built in a masculine energy. And the masculine and the feminine both need to exist.
Mm-hmm.
They're both very important.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been mainly masculine energy, which is linear growth instead of cyclical growth.
Mm-hmm.
If we just think about those examples, it's very competitive. It's numbers based. It's not as community nurturing, compassion based. Not showing weakness, not showing vulnerability.
That's right.
And I'm never selling 100% feminine business. I want both to exist. But in order for the pendulum to swing, the well is going to be feminine. Right?
Right, right.
And then it can, somewhere in society, maybe we can have some businesses that are pretty good split of both.
Well, and it's been proved empirically that when large companies have an equal split between male and female directors, that the bottom line improves.
Of course it does. We're so freaking efficient and effective with our time. Women are amazing at time management because we have to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the feminine economy, it's allowing space. I think of the things I've learned, like allowing space, slowing down, going after what is calling to you.
Reflecting on both your mistakes, but also your improvements. The one thing that I think for every business person who wants to grow is constant reflection. We do often talk about working in the business and on the business. Yeah. And today, we're very much talking about working on the business. Mm-hmm. Where do we want it to go? Where have we been? What are we reflecting? What do we just flat out not like doing that we want less of?
Sure.
We want less of that in our future business lives. And what do we want more of? And here, I would say, as unrealistic as it sounds, feel free to dream huge dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Huge world-beating dreams, because first of all, that will be your pole star.
Yeah.
The thing that you aim towards. It will help you decide which of the dozen things that you do you would like to focus on, because it either fits in supporting that pole star or it doesn't. And then if you achieve only a little bit of your huge dream, you're already so much further ahead than if you didn't dream that dream at all. And for myself, I've actually had to reset the pole star several times because I apparently dream not big enough.
Too small.
The very first time when I thought I would like to be known. I remember, oh goodness, when I first started as a genealogist, you know, I didn't advertise and I just thought that, you know, if I could just make a business here in the province, and then it felt huge. It felt huge to be able to say, no, you know, I think I could sell across to BC. I think that would be okay. And now, you know, I have clients who have bought my services or my products around the world.
Internationally, global.
Yes. So that's something else. Like we all need to sell more things.
Yeah.
The world needs more things from us. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't need to be a huge thing. You don't have to write the next, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning book. You could sell a checklist of, you know, your top tips on whatever magical thing that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to get our stuff into the world.
That's right.
More.
That's right.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to sell more. The world needs more. And it, even I know this, I still fail to execute because I get wrapped up in working in the business, in doing the speaking, in doing the client work, in doing those things. I let the projects take my time, and I need to spend more time ideating and developing things to sell, because honestly, the world wants more of you. Make it easy for them to buy from you.
Oh, I am 100% into that. Make it easy for people to buy from you.
Make it
in every way, make it easy.
Yes.
It can be on such a practical level. Your link tree on your social media.
Mm-hmm.
Make it easy for people to purchase. Boom,
yes.
Purchase.
Yeah.
Don't, people get lost in steps.
Mm-hmm.
They're overwhelmed. They feel blocked. Don't block them. It's interesting. I reflect a lot, but I have a really hard time celebrating myself.
Mm.
So I have such big, giant goals.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I love this, how we're different, the contrast between us.
Mm-hmm.
Huge, huge, huge. That when something really amazing happens, but is smaller than my sister. I'm like, what? This is nothing. And I'm like, no. Celebrate everything. I think celebrate, and I know there's the gratitude. You can do gratitude for that, but I think really celebrate and stop and take time and pause to celebrate all the achievements, all the little things. The first interview, the first radio, the first,
yes,
you know, the first client, yes, the 10 clients when you're hoping for 100. Celebrate the 10. Like, what are we so afraid of?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we afraid of making mistakes and of failing? Is it the physical discomfort that we feel in our bodies? You and I are very different. I jump in before I'm ready into everything. And you prepare, uh-huh, analyze, mm-hmm, and then make your plan.
Yep.
I think in both scenarios, mistakes happen.
Oh, absolutely.
We're afraid of making mistakes. If we're afraid of failing, we're afraid ultimately of how it feels. I think it's the physical sensations and the fear and what people think of us and how uncomfortable that is.
And I think we're also very walled off in anticipating what our fears can be. Because as women, you know, it's our job really to anticipate when things might go wrong. And so we might be 10 steps distant from that mistake that's going to happen, which I know is a part of my process where I overanalyze things to death and then I allow that to stop me from doing the thing. And so executing before we are fully ready is a mantra that I practice now. And being heard encompasses so many different things for women in business. We need to be heard. What is the actual message that we're trying to get across? What is the service or product that only we can provide to our ideal clients? And we need to be able to practice saying that to a community who will be able to give us feedback, and we need to be able to take that.
That is the piece right there, because your best feedback comes after you've jumped in.
Yes.
You can't receive the feedback, yes, until you've so actually good. Taken the step.
That's right.
It doesn't exist. You can make up as much feedback, potential feedback or made up feedback in your head to try to prepare.
Oh, that's so good.
But you can't actually experience it and learn. And I do think it's true. The quicker you make decisions, mm-hmm, the quicker you ask for feedback, the faster your business will grow. And we're so afraid of feedback as much as we're afraid of
criticism.
Because it feels like criticism, but mm-hmm, what it is help. It's actually right. Information.
Okay, so I have to say this. When our customers come back to us with feedback or even a complaint, they are actually our very best friends. So I need to turn this around, yeah, for our listeners. When your clients are so invested in your relationship that they're willing to do the dirty work of feeling uncomfortable in order to reach out to you to say, hey, this isn't working for me, they are your very best friends. And you need to take it like this is your very best friend who's invested in your relationship, who wants you to do well, and then do whatever it is that they're telling you to do.
And, you know, I fought that so hard at the start because I was like, I have a vision. I have a mission.
You don't understand
and
me.
I'm creating this. This is intuitive. Like, you should just believe what I'm saying because it's me and I know. You know, I was so like, sure of what I was doing and creating. And then feedback rolls in and you're like, what is happening
here? Right.
But I know, you know, so there's that balance as a creator.
Yes.
Someone like me who jumps in, who doesn't prepare, jumps in, receives the feedback. Wait a second. What's happening? I'm on a mission. I have this vision. And I think they're giving you the most beautiful gift.
Mm-hmm.
They're just helping mold it so it's successful.
And they're preparing you for greater success with all of your future clients. It is the greatest gift.
Mm-hmm.
But like everyone else, of course, I felt badly the first few times. And now when I receive feedback, instantly I've got this mantra in my head. This is your friend. They want the best for you. Take it in that light.
Yeah.
What is the most generous possible interpretation of what this person is trying to tell you?
Take that, not the negative.
Not the negative.
Oh, I take it down.
The best for
Thank you.
You.
That's beautiful. When well members come up, I love feedback. I feel like we can't get it enough. I feel like we're like desperate. We're like throwing out forms. Fill out this form, you know. It'll only take you 3 minutes. We'll give you a prize. We're going to pay you to give us your feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so important for us to develop a community that serves the women who have bought in.
Mm-hmm.
They're already a part of it. They're invested. They want it. What do they want? That's such a great sort of idea, a way to end. It's making mistakes and asking for feedback and receiving feedback and discerning whether it's something that is still in line with your values and your mission and what you are doing. Because not everyone knows the ultimate goal. So what is this in alignment? Can we shift this using that feedback, especially if it comes repeatedly?
And as you were saying that, drawing it out in a repeatable process, it becomes more like a practice.
Mm-hmm.
And in yoga and in Pilates and in all these other disciplines where we don't ever expect to master the thing. We're practicing the thing. What we need to do is do it more often, fail faster, make more mistakes, do it quicker, learn faster, rinse, repeat, repeat and repeat.
Repeat
and
repeat,
that's how
repeat.
You get to be an expert.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we want to be. We want to be the trusted expert for what we know and what we do.
Life.
Because we already are. We already know that about mm-hmm. ourselves, but it's communicating it to the exterior.
Actually, that's a funny thing about expertise. I think we allow ourselves to get into a bit of a scarcity mindset where we don't share our very best tips and tricks because we're afraid that someone's going to come along and they're going to steal it from us and be better at it than we are. When you seed a community, and I've taken lessons from the Well Collaborative and I've built my own community, and I share and I share and I share my greatest, latest, best learning with them, and they have given back to me in ways I can't even describe to you. So we are a developing community. We have created things that have never been done before, and I am the lead, because part of being the lead of a group, our group is almost 500 people, is that you have to let go of control of doing everything yourself.
You sure do.
Yeah.
And that's another podcast. But here we go.
Yes.
One of the biggest mistakes I see women professionals, entrepreneurs, leaders do is not let go of control. They don't bring people on. And I always say, hire people who are better than you at that, mm-hmm. at that task.
Mm-hmm.
Don't stay the best. Always hire people better than you.
Celebrate people who are better than you.
Yeah.
So that you can focus on the thing that you love to
yeah.
do best.
Then you can really relinquish control mm-hmm. and actually create space and capacity. I love that. And I think a lot of that is fear of growth, fear of success.
Yes.
I think it's you limiting your own success
mm-hmm.
because you're actually not comfortable with being more successful. We want it, but we're uncomfortable because it's new.
Mm-hmm. And we don't know what to do with it.
We don't know how to navigate it.
No.
So I think I would say quick to make decisions, quick to fail, quick to ask for feedback, and quick to ask for help and advice from those who have gone before you.
Yes.
I feel like that is where I kind of want to end it today, is that that's why I reach out to Linda to talk on this, because I want to glean from you. I want your wisdom and knowledge. I know where you're at. I know you're those steps ahead of me and a lot of women in our community, and I want to know what you're doing. So thanks for sharing with us today.
Thank you, Tammy, for inviting me onto the podcast.
It means so much. I love hearing from you.
Thank you again.